Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with bonkers.ie, Ireland's favourite comparison and switching website. Visit bonkers.ie today and start saving on your household bills.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And 51551 is our text number, and Joe at rte.ie. Niall, good afternoon.
Joe, how are you getting on?
Good. It's an incredible dilemma, an incredible situation you're in. I don't know how you, I don't know how you deal with it on a daily basis. But let's get a glimpse, because you say I'm in a dilemma. I know I should get tested for this disease, but I won't at the moment. I don't want it hanging over me and my girlfriend. We want to enjoy life. Is there a 50-50 chance that you'll get Huntington's disease?
Yeah, it's because it's hereditary, it's a 50-50 chance passing on to a child. So I've in my father's family, so my father suffers from the condition, and there's six children born to my grandmother, and of the six, three has Huntington's disease.
Yeah.
So it looks like of my father's children, there's three of us, one out of the three of us will likely get it, but none of us have been tested yet.
And why? Why? What age are you now, Niall?
I'm 28, and my brother's 30, and my sister's 32.
Okay.
And I think right now, we kind of see what it's like for our dad. You know, he's in acute care in a hospital, which, in a way, listening to people on the show, he's nearly lucky to have that, even though there is a facility out there, Bloomfield, that has offered him a spot. But, you know, the HSC aren't providing the funding. So you see that present for your father, and you don't want to think about that for yourself. Mm-hmm. You just want to get on with it. And down the line, thinking about children, of course, we're going to have to get tested.
Yeah.
Any of the situation, do I have it? Do I want to pass this gene on? And a lot of that doubt would be down to the fact that there is a centre in Bloomfield that caters for Huntington's disease. But it seems to me, and it seems to all the callers that came in during the week, it is impossible to get in there.
And that was the initial call we got about Huntington's disease.
It was
Pauline Doran phoned us. She's 70 and her son Joe is 50. He has Huntington's. He's in a nursing home at the moment, but she's trying to get him into a dedicated facility. And I think her description of Huntington's, I don't want to misquote, she said it's like MS and a load of different serious illnesses rolled into one. And I know on the website of Huntington's.ie, they say it's a neurological illness caused by an expanded gene, your DNA, that causes cells in parts of your brain to gradually malfunction and die. As brain cells die, you will experience changes with your movement, thinking and emotions. Symptoms vary from person to person and different stages. Even people in the same family may be affected differently. But she was pleading for her Joe to be moved to Bloomfield, which is the dedicated unit in South Dublin for people with Huntington's disease. Tell us how your father discovered and how he progressed into treatment, Niall.
So it wouldn't have been my father that discovered. My father was kind of deteriorating, and he and my mom were living separately. They would have still been married, but they were living separately. And then my mom realized that dad wasn't feeding himself, or, you know, he one day was at the wheel of the car, and he fell asleep at the wheel of the car and crashed the car. Luckily, he got out.
Okay.
But these were signs, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, kind of, he'd often just fall asleep randomly during the day, and that's kind of a sign of Huntington's as well. So it was my mom that was known a deterioration. So she I suppose we got the test done and we figured out that he had Huntington's, and we had to let the rest of our family know because it is hereditary. Yeah. And we found out from past medical records that his father had it as well. So it was Mom that noticed it, and then she would became essentially his full-time carer.
Okay.
And while working a job, she had to work part-time, and she would... you noticed a decline in our father, but more than that, you noticed a decline in our mom. And it couldn't continue like that. We'll just say in 2017 was probably the toughest year of all our lives. How she could see no hope for herself, never mind our father, because she would have been trapped caring for him. And in December 2017... my brother probably did the hardest thing any of us would ever have to do. Yeah. But we brought him up to A&E. Mm. And because this was because we had looked for help and we were given no help, you know?
Okay.
And we had to bring him into acute care, and the hospital out in the west took him on. And
when you say you brought him up to A&E, so you arrived in A&E obviously without an appointment, which is born out of your frustration of not being able to get any help. And
watch,
so you presented at A&E. What happened then?
We had to leave Dad and let them take him.
And what do you mean leave him, Niall? What
leave him? So the nurses could give him a bed. If we were with him the whole time, they'd just discharge him. So we knew we couldn't care for him. We knew someone had to care for him. And that's what would have happened. And finally, he got a bed somewhere and he was getting care. But all the while, we were wanting to get Bloomfield and fighting for Bloomfield. Yeah.
But Niall, just this image in my head, now, which is born out of the frustration of your family, not out of any other... propulsion. You're saying you went, your family brought your father to A&E in a hospital in the West because you were so frustrated at your inability to get help from, that your mother was deteriorating, she was becoming a full-time care, she was a full-time carer as well as trying to hold down a job, and she felt trapped because things weren't going, he was diagnosed with Huntington's. So you went to the hospital, and I don't mean to be cold when I put it this way. So you were forced to go to the hospital, to A&E. You walked in with your dad. You sat him down or whatever and gave the details at the hatch. And then you all left.
I don't want to be dwelling on this, Joe. But it was the only option we had. And it was my brother in there and it was the only option we had, okay?
Yeah, I understand. I think that's an incredibly...
it's an incredibly tough decision, and I wouldn't wish it on anyone.
Yeah.
But the reality of it is, he was in acute care. Mm-hmm. Then 6 months later, we were able to get... He was accepted into a nursing home.
So the nurses came out and said, this man is now on his own.
I don't know, Joe.
Yeah, you don't know. Of course you don't. But anyway, the next you learned was what? That your father had been admitted...
He'd been admitted, and then we would come in to visit him in the hospital. It was clear that he needed care.
Okay.
So the next step, because we couldn't, the whole thing was we couldn't get him into a nursing home
before
he had been admitted into a hospital.
Okay.
He couldn't get into a nursing home, and he wouldn't freely go himself. Mm. So it was the only way to do it, Joe. Okay.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
And how long was he in that hospital for, having been admitted through A&E?
5 months, and we'd visit him. And we got, it was evident that the placement wasn't suitable. So we eventually got a nursing home to accept him.
Yeah.
But we had a staff assessment from Bloomfield Hospital.
Okay.
And they confirmed they would be able to cater for his complex needs. But the HSE informed us that there'd be no access to this funding.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, he was accepted into a nursing home. And that lasted for 5 months. But and there had been funding for one-to-one care, 24-hour one-to-one care, as part of the package. But this wasn't communicated to the nursing home. So I guess the nurses were, their hands were full. And Dad needed special care. I imagine with his condition was tormenting the other patients because of his frustration, his lack of understanding, his special needs. Then eventually came to a head. He was, I guess, assaulted by, or he had his nose broken by another
patient, resident,
and the nursing homes can give terminate a contract of care with 24-hour notice, which is what they did, and they landed them up in A&E again.
Niall, I just need to get a few things in because they're coming up to the election moratorium in 3 minutes, so I just want to get a few things in that may be deemed as being pertinent to the election, because we can't talk about them after 2 o'clock. I'm very conscious that the conversation we've had here on Liveline since the beginning of January, the day the election was called, was about pensions, and then the issue came up about the treatment for people with eating disorders, that there was only 3 beds available in the country, despite the fact that the Taoiseach had given an undertaking to a family, Weadon, for example, said that it would be sorted out urgently. It hasn't been sorted out, so that's that said. And now that moved into Huntington's, and the fact that a lot of people are suffering from Huntington's and their family are trying to get in this dedicated unit. It's 2 minutes. In this dedicated unit in Bloomfield in Dublin. But one of the problems is there seems to be a breakdown and joined up thinking. Yeah. Maybe someone will sort it out after the election. But just to get this fact and figure in before 2 o'clock, and that is that it's costing 400,000, you reckon, for your father where he is at the moment, whereas in Bloomfield the cost would be 189,000.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay.
And so that's said. Like a holistic approach there. Yeah.
Okay. So that's said. So now we just forget about that. Not forget it, but that's parked because we're now into the election moratorium. But I just want to go back to that dilemma that you're in, Niall. You said 2017 was the worst year of all your family's lives. Does one, the dilemma you're in, which we'll talk about, but two, what do you think your father now understands of what's happening to him?
He would have initially... So my father can't really express himself. You can imagine he's trying to communicate, and you know he's trying to say something to you, but he can't. He can't express himself. And sometimes you might get the words out, but most of the time you can't tell. But you tell he's trapped. Yeah. And he didn't understand his situation. He thought he was in a hotel, and he was expecting to come home. But this would have been the case anyway, because he was in his condition. He didn't understand his plight or his deterioration at all.
Yeah.
Hence... Maybe in Bloomfield there would be more treatment with speech and language therapists. Yeah.
Stimulation.
Exactly. Yeah. So he'd be able to, you know, come to terms with it, or he'd be able to understand, and he'd be in a better environment rather than the environment he's in an acute bed, where he does get 24-hour care. And I must say, everyone in that hospital are great to him, but it's not what he needs.
It's not specialised for that specific...
Yeah, and as you said, it's cheaper. It's costing the taxpayers so much more money. And we've made this point to Jim Daly, Minister for Mental Health, Minister for Disabilities, all that.
Okay,
it's all been said. There's been...
And this incident, it's now past 2 o'clock, but this incident, Niall, where you said, and this highlights, which has been raised before, we had one family the other day talking about their relative who wails, unfortunately, this was the word they used, in their nursing home, because they're in so much distress and pain, but the other people in the nursing home don't understand that she has Huntington's disease. But in your situation, where your father got the broken nose, have you, and we're not going to blame anyone, but was that because he was demonstrating distress, and somebody didn't understand, some other resident didn't understand, and maybe one word buried? Have you any idea of the background to that incident?
I imagine my father would have been a handful. He needs someone looking at him the whole time. When he's on his own, like the other patient, was it Martin's wife? She wails. My father tries to escape.
Yeah.
Tries to climb on things. He's a handful.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not easy on anyone. And he goes in his bouts of... he wouldn't wail now. He's more of a imploder. He'd go in silence, you know?
And now the dilemma that you face and your two siblings face, you're in your late 20s. Surely that is not a dilemma that can rest on just your shoulders, Niall. Do you get professional help? Do you talk about it with your partner, with your family, about should I try and find out if I have Huntington's disease and what does it mean if the answer is yes? Is that the appalling vista?
So I guess we've always known we'll have to think about it, but it's the recent calls into your show, I felt compelled to come on and think about it more. I would have just, you know, put it aside. It's not bothering me yet.
I
am in a position where I'm really responsible for other people yet, if I was to start a family and that kind of thing. But thinking about it more, I will have to get tested, but it's the future. You hear of, you know, funds or specialist centres being closed down instead of more funds being put towards people with complex needs, complex neurological needs. And is my future going to be the same plight of my dad? Am I going to be a burden on my girlfriend? Am I going to pass this on to my children? Are they still going to be in a position where it's not treated correctly, or they don't have access to a Bloomfield facility where they can actually be treated and tested? Like, this is stuff I will have to come to terms with, but I'm not ready to yet. And when I do come to terms with it, I hope that they'll start funding it and start letting people into it, because then maybe there's more understanding. Then maybe I know, okay, I can actually live with this disease. It will be a plight, but I'll have people caring for me and I won't be a burden.
You said earlier you have a 50-50 chance of having Huntington's disease. Does that mean that you're overly conscious when you get when you mentioned your dad falling asleep, okay? Falling asleep, the wheel crashing the car. But we all doze off every now and again. Like, do you say to yourself, if you have a nap, oh my God, is this something to worry about?
No, honestly,
brilliant.
I haven't thought about it for myself at all until this week. You've had a lot of callers in, and I've thought about it more. And it was Mark's son who was diagnosed at the age of 23.
That was
a bit of a wake up call for me. I didn't think you could be diagnosed that early. Maybe it's a sleeping gene, but it sounded like Maxon has it and is just trying to get on with it. I haven't noticed any decline in my own conditions nor my siblings, so I think we're getting on with it. But I know my cousin trying to have a baby, and she had an IVF to make sure that the gene wasn't there, but that's very it's very risky, it's very costly, but it seemed to be a solution for her. But it might be a solution for me. I don't know. But it's only recently I've really started thinking about it. But I'm not going to let it affect me until it needs to affect me.
Well, that's remarkable resilience. It's remarkable.
But you wouldn't want to dwell on it. Like, what's the point?
Okay, I know. And is there a reliable test for Huntington's? Because is it not fair to say that in terms of fundraising and research, Huntington's wouldn't be up there with other, and this is no criticism of other campaigns or whatever, but
no,
is there a reliable test?
Yeah, as I understand it, you can get tested for Huntington's, but it's the research in combating it which falls behind.
Yeah. And we're told
it is a rare disease, to me it sounds like the circumstances for people or families that are affected by disease is quite similar. That's the real issue here, that the country, the HSE, is really failing, suffers of the disease.
And Niall, how is your mother?
Since, like, I feel for the lady you had on the first day, the mother who's looking after her 50-year-old son, that's akin to how my mom was.
Yeah.
And it's not easy going in and visiting her partner every day and going into your father regularly. But it's better than being a full-time care for that individual who doesn't understand what's going on. So my mom, thankfully, is able to get some part of her life back.
Yeah.
But it's not without constant worry and her own research and battling with the HSE and battling with disability services and, and old age services. It's not without all that. That still remains.
And I cannot imagine what it was like. You've given us a glimpse for your mother, for all of you, on that particular day when you went to A&E and realised the only way we can get our dad looked after is for, after campaigning to get him looked after and get him to Bloomfield unsuccessfully, is to register him at A&E and then leave the building. I cannot imagine what that walk was like for your mother and all of you.
It was my brother who
brought him.
You don't want to ever do that. You don't ever have to do that. But it's the bravest thing he's done, or he could do, and it was for Dad's good. But, you know, it's never something you want to do, and it's never something you should have to do. It shouldn't have come to that.
Okay. I just wonder, Niall, have you... The dilemma you're in is a moral dilemma, it's a medical dilemma, it's a philosophical dilemma. It's a dilemma I suspect not many people in the world have gone through in terms of will I, won't I get a test which will tell me if I have this awful disease that I have a 50-50% chance on. And that's stats. Stats aren't always reliable. But that I have a 50-50% chance that I've inherited from my father who's currently... going through it, and it's an extraordinarily difficult disease, one to go through and to witness. Maybe people have written books on this or talked about this before, this dilemma. How do you address it? Brian Higgins is CEO of Bloomfield Hospital, which has been mentioned a number of occasions and has contacted us. Brian, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And Bloomfield, just it used to be in Donnybrook, am I right? Was it here originally?
It was, yeah. We're a charity founded by the Quakers over 200 years ago.
Okay.
And we moved to Rathfarnham in 2005.
And it's a dedicated unit for people with Huntington's disease.
It is, yeah. So one of the units that we have here in Bloomfield is specifically for people with Huntington's disease, and it is the only service of its kind on the island in terms of inpatient services.
And how would you, and I know this is a difficult, how would you describe Huntington's disease, Brian, for people who...
It really is an incredibly difficult disease to live with. And I think, you know, as Niall has explained, as a family member, when you see someone and have to try and support someone with it, it's incredibly difficult. It is, some people may have heard of it referred to as St. Vitus's dance. So it is those kind of very jerky movements. It's very difficult. So eventually movement will go. There will be difficulties with swallowing and speaking. Mental health difficulties, psychiatric illnesses are quite likely to come in. So it's a very multifaceted disease that really, I suppose, strips people of independence and of dignity. And what we are trying to do here is work with people and their families to retain both the independence and the dignity for as long as we possibly can.
And Brian, in Ireland, do we have a higher and is it average rate insofar as that makes any difference to people who have it, but how are we on the international scale of people with Huntington's disease?
I'm not entirely sure, unfortunately, Joe. The experts in the hospital would be able to give you a better gauge in that. But I think, you know, it's like anything. Statistically, where we fall becomes kind of irrelevant in that, You know, I think what we're concerned about, and what you've highlighted this week in the show, is we're talking about real people and real families and a very underreported issue. So I would have to say thank you on behalf of ourselves and here at Bloomfield for highlighting it.
And it was
thank you, Joe.
No, it was Pauline and other people who contacted us and thought of what was happening about other issues and the absence of despite promises, facilities. Brian, we've heard a serious number of examples at this stage, including from Niall today, where they believe the cost of care to their, in his case, Niall, his father, at this stage, is greater than the cost if he went into this dedicated unit.
I think very often it can be. And, you know, the unit that we have here is a kind of a highly resourced unit in terms of the numbers of nurses, of healthcare assistants, and of the multidisciplinary team, so or physiotherapists, or psychiatrists, or neuropsychologists, occupational therapy. So all of the multidisciplines that are required we have here. And that's why, you know, Bloomfield prides itself on the service that we're able to offer to the Huntington's community, you know. It is a very small number of people who have it, but it's our charitable objective that says it is, and as people will have heard this week, it is a group of people who require a lot of help, and the resources are very limited for them. So we're very proud to do what we're doing, and we do hope that the issues that, that exist for families can be resolved, because we absolutely would love the people who require our services to be here and receive them.
And what is your relationship with the HSE?
Well, the HSE are by far our biggest funder, and our relationship is very positive.
Okay, great.
I think internally, what as far as I am aware, Huntington's disease, because of the uniqueness of its manifestation, there is an element of it which would fall under disability services, and an element that falls under psychiatric services. And so from our perspective, the funding agreements between CHO areas or centrally within the HSE, there are internal discussions that I'm sure they're having. And, you know, I know that the process is very slow. I think, you know, very often we share the frustrations that the family share in terms of how quickly people need our services and how quickly we can open those services up. But in terms of the HSE, you know, we do know that a lot of work is being done. At the same time, I do understand that, you know, any delay has huge impact on the family.
Yeah. And then this dilemma, Niall. Niall, do you want to tell me your dad's name or give him the first name? Just say...
I'd rather not.
Okay, that's fine, Just I just don't want to keep referring to him as your dad, but I understand why you're saying this. Niall, the dilemma, Brian, that Niall is going through as this child of somebody with Huntington's.
Yes.
In his 20s, should he, or what would he do about, now I'm not looking for an answer, but in terms of all the ramifications of that dilemma that Niall is in, surely that's endured by so many people.
It is. And I think as Niall has explained there, that complexity of that 50-50 opportunity. And I think it's very common that people, well, I think everybody who is in a Huntington's family will struggle with, I suppose, that dilemma as to whether you do or don't get tested. And I think it's common that people don't. And to be honest, Joe, I wouldn't even pretend to understand what that actually feels like to go through it. So in terms of where it is, I can perfectly understand people who say, I want to know, and I can totally understand people who say, I don't want to know. And I think one of the things, the struggles for us as in Bloomfield and our job in trying to support is to say, well, in either case, we would love to have services that can support people pre-diagnosis and at early diagnosis with partners in Beaumont and with the Huntington's Disease Association of Ireland to try and look at how we serve people better. But certainly if people require our inpatient services, to make sure that they that those services are available and that we provide the best service we can.
Okay. Niall, who do you draw strength from? Is it your parents, your partner, your family, your friends, yourself, obviously?
family's a big thing, you know. My mom has been a hero throughout all of it.
Yeah.
My brother and sister have been amazing. My cousins, similarly looking at how they're, one of their parents has deteriorated. Yeah. They've been amazing for that person. So it's family really, really step up.
Yeah.
And then obviously my girlfriend's been great. And I haven't told many people about the whole thing because you know I don't.
Why should you?
I don't know. Brian said it like some people want to just not know and just keep going.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of in that boat at the minute, but I might change my tact. Yeah, family gets you through it, Joe.
And Niall, do you know, your father obviously has Huntington's disease. Is there other members of your extended family? You mentioned your cousins worried as well.
Cousins.
Have you an uncle who has it as well?
One uncle, one aunt,
So three people in your immediate family.
Joe, could I just add?
Brian, yes.
I think what Niall is explaining is just the kind of the pain of being part of a family. So having to try and support and see your father suffer with the disease and then having to try and cope with the query as to whether you do or whether you don't have Huntington's and whether it will then manifest itself as a disease. I think that understanding means that Huntington's is such a small and relatively unknown disease. The impact of that is there are large numbers of people who come from Huntington's families who make deliberate decisions not to have children so that the disease ends. And I think that is an indicator of just how painful the disease is for people. And I suppose it's an indicator of how important it is that we get to talk more about Huntington's, that people understand it, so that we can find a cure. There's a saying within the Huntington's movement that it is the most curable, incurable disease, because they know what causes it. It's now trying to figure out how to stop that from manifesting. And we can only do that and I'm talking for the whole Huntington's community, we can only do that by having more conversations about it, allowing people to understand what it is, asking people for support. There's a beautiful movie, documentary, that the Huntington's Disease Association of Ireland were very much involved in.
Okay.
And it's called Dancing at the Vatican.
Okay.
If people would have the opportunity, I think it might be available on the internet. But it gives a wonderful insight into the families, some families here and families across the world, and what the disease actually is and the impact that it has. Because it's the impact, I think, that Niall is talking about in as much as he's talking about the disease itself.
I'm looking at there's a movie on YouTube called Huntington's Dance. Is that the one we're talking about now?
It's Dancing at the Vatican. I know it has been going around cinemas.
Great.
And the Huntington's Disease Association of Ireland may have more detail on it, but it's a wonderful movie.
Okay. And
Joe, you mentioned family gets through it. I must say the carers in the hospital with that, although they wouldn't have the equipment or the expertise to treat that properly, they are great with them.
Yeah.
And they really have helped us a lot. So I want to, they have really helped us. But it's just a shame that they can't help more, but there is a facility that can help Dad more. And Brian is part of that.
Brian, are the Quakers still involved?
Yes, we're very proud. So for the last 207 years, we've had that oversight and guidance. The board has a huge contingent of the Quaker community, and I think that's kind of what drives us on. You know, we work in areas that many others don't, and I think it is our Quaker ethos that kind of pushes us forward into what justice is and trying to achieve justice for people who don't really get it in other ways, in other places.
Okay. And how you're funded through the HSE, but you have to fundraise as well, or the Quakers that fundraise, or
we do. It isn't easy, you know. I've worked in charities before, and we've had very successful fundraising drives because we work with issues that affect large numbers of people. In Bloomfield, we specialise in severe and enduring mental health. We specialise in dementia care, and we specialise in Huntington's disease. And they, I suppose, in one sense, thankfully, impact on smaller numbers of people. So it is more difficult to get higher levels of public support and fundraising. But I suppose our ambitions about how we can serve communities better are entirely dependent on engaging and getting community support. So if anyone would like to help us, which would be fantastic, bloomfield.ie is our website, and the details to help donate or to do any activity for us, or even to know a little bit more and to help in whatever way, we'd love any help we could get.
Okay, and it's a beautiful website, but it's bloomfield.ie, and it's an education. I've been looking at it over the last few days. It's an education. Brian Higgins, CEO of Bloomfield Hospital, thank you so much. Niall, the amount of love is the wrong word, but the amount of warmth that is coming in to try and embrace you in this awful, not awful, in this dilemma that you're in. And I think the most prescient one, or the most interesting one, someone saying, listening to Niall, I've no doubt whatever decision he makes will be the right one. So take your time and in your own time, and I wish you well and your family well and your extended family also. That's Niall. Niall, thanks indeed, and as I say, kind regards to you and your family. That's Niall.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Niall. Bye bye. 51551.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And joe@rt.ie. Catherine O'Reilly. Catherine, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks. And Niall, who opened the programme today, continued the discussion. Another angle on the discussion about Huntington's disease and the fact that it is hereditary, and his father has it and is going through it at the minute, and it's a very difficult stage. What's your situation, Catherine, can I ask?
Well, my father passed away 4 years ago from Huntington's, and myself and my four siblings all tested positive for the gene. So my brother and sister have it at the moment, and the other three, we have the gene. So, you know, it's kind of more or less when it kicks off, you know, but just try to be very positive about it, you know, so as much as you can.
And when did you have the test, Catherine?
I found out, I think it was about 9 years ago. I was the first one out of the five to be tested. And I tested positive for it. And then a year later, then I discovered I was pregnant. I was nearly 41 now. I didn't plan it.
Okay.
And I was devastated because I was kind of, you know, thinking, what if things progress with me and I'm not able to look after the child? And I didn't want that either. Like, so. But no, I have to say, she is literally a breath of fresh air every day, and I do believe everything happens for a reason. Like, I think if I didn't have her, I'd probably be sick, even though she's crazy and mad. But, like, you know, if she keeps me going, I don't have time to be sick with her, you know. So, but no, I just think you have to. It is very hard, like, you know. And I will have good days and I have bad days. I'm just like everybody else. Like, but you have to be positive, because if you're not, it gets to your brain, and I do believe that.
Yeah.
You know, my dad now wouldn't have really known what was wrong with him at the time, and he wouldn't have done a lot during the day. He would have just kind of sat there, like, and be looking out a window. And it's like Liz from the Huntington's Association of Ireland had said to me, like, you know, something like that, a patient like that that's sitting there not doing anything, the Huntington's is just kind of diving on its brain even more, you know, that way. So I just kind of, you know, just believe you need to be just getting up in the morning, getting all the sunshine and sunlight into you, and just be positive and keep yourself around positive people.
And it
is very hard.
And Niall, as you heard, he's in his late 20s, and his decision at the moment is he's not going for the test, even though he's 50-50 in terms of statistically having Huntington's. What prompted you to get the test done at 41, Catherine?
Well, I think in the beginning I was like, no, I don't want to know. But then as time went on, I was like, oh God, I wonder, and then I might drop a bowl of sugar or something, and you're like, oh my God, I have it. So I just felt then if I knew it would actually be better for me, because I think I would have drove myself demented, to be honest with you, because, you know, I can be a bit of a worrywart anyway. So, but I did. I went for the test and I'm fine. I had a grieving period after the test, and I was really upset and I wasn't sleeping. And I went to the doctor and she had to give me sleeping tablets to help me to sleep, because I was really now, I was angry. It was just, she said, you'll go through a grieving process. Yeah, and I did. You know, but she said, if after 6 months you're still like this, then she says we need to do something about it. But no, I got through it, and I think finding out was better for me, because I know what, I just kind of know what my path is, you know, that way. So, and as the neurologist had said to me, Dan Healy had said, like, you know, there will be something to help silence the gene for your children, but just not for you. But I'm happy to have it if my children don't. That's, you know, that's just the way it is for me. It is a terrible disease. I mean, I looked at my dad, like, you know, and the aggression and anger, and it was horrific. Like, it was heartbreaking.
And I see he was in Bloomfield, and you were very happy with that facility.
Yeah, Bloomfield, they were fabulous, I have to say. He was so well looked after up there. I couldn't ever fault him, like, you know, but, you know, it was horrific going up, and he's just sitting there, like, you know, in a vegetative state, and you'd be crying the whole 12 exits home, like, from the motorway, like, you know, because it is, you might go up and he just sit there and tell you he hated you. You know, and then you'd be crying the whole way home. But, you know, it was very hard. It was, you know, very sad looking at him.
Okay. Catherine, thanks indeed. Thank you so much. Really appreciate the call today. We're over time. I have to take a quick break. That's Catherine O'Reilly. Thank you, Catherine, and kind regards to you and your extended family.